Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Aircoy Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Season, and look ahead for them. They've got two home games coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And our guest today on this program, he's going to be with us the whole hour. His title, I looked this up before the show, Vice President of Marketing and Communications. It's Jonathan Lintner is going to be on with us. He's sitting across from me right now. Soccer City, every Thursday, 6 to 7 o'clock here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Jonathan is here to answer your questions as fans of Louisville City and Racing Louisville. We've gotten a few on Twitter, on social media. If you have some and you haven't hit us up on social media, you can text us. 437-9680 is the text line. Whatever questions you have, whether it's about the teams, whether it's about the organization, whether it's about events coming up, the international friendlies coming up, whatever floats your boat about Racing Louisville, Louisville City Soccer Holdings at large, text us. 437-9680 or hit us up on Twitter at Soccer City Radio. Jeff Milby, Spencer Brown, our producer as ever, and as I mentioned, Jonathan Lintner is here. What's going on, Jonathan? Happy to have you on. I feel like it's been a long time since you've been on the show in person.
I feel like the SNL host who never got invited back. I think it's been, I was looking back, I think it's been like 6.5 years.
I mean, to be fair,
this isn't on you.
I was about to say, I've only been in for about a year and a half now back, so it's not on me.
I'm talking to you, Lance McGarvey. Yeah. And I think honestly, the only time I ever came in studio for it was when our good friend Steve Peek, I think
way
he no-showed on Lance McGarvey in December of 2016.
That is a long time ago now.
Went over to the studio in my pajamas and we did what was a pretty good show.
I'm sure it was. You know, sometimes when you roll out of bed, those are the best shows.
There's a lot to talk about.
Let's just get into what happened last night. A super fun game, a super entertaining game, and another game where Lou City just flat out dominates their opponent. 5-1 against Detroit. Detroit, for what it's worth, in the playoff picture right now. A quality team. They were in fifth place coming into last night's game. They started the year red hot, winning their first five league games. They were kind of that surprise team that caught everybody's eye. Oh, hey, Detroit might be for real this year. They still might be for real. They're probably going to make the playoffs in all likelihood. But last night, just completely, thoroughly outplayed. And it's the continuance of a theme for Louisville City. Now 6-0 at home in league games, a plus 22 goal differential. They've outscored their opponents by 22 goals through those six games. That is just an incredible number. You throw in the U.S. Open Cup win over Greenville, it's seven wins at home, a plus 24 goal differential, if you want to include that one. No matter how you look at it, they have been spectacular at home. I've said this on this show, I've said it elsewhere as well. I can't remember being as impressed with a Louisville City team as I've been with this one over these opening couple of months. You've obviously been in the organization for a long time. Even when you weren't a part of the organization, you were watching this team very closely. So I want to ask you, how do you feel about that thought? I mean, I can't remember being as impressed as I've been this year. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. The questions I hear, is this the deepest team we've had, or is this the most talented team we've had? And it's like, well, you start to compare the numbers at about the quarter mark, the one-third mark of the season, to the two championship-winning seasons, and they're ahead of those projections at those times. What I think is, you know, we went into the season, some of the older guys on their way out, and you bring this newer bunch in, and you kept hearing about this kind of generational shift and how's it going to go. Well, it's easier to make a generational shift in your roster when you have Lynn Family Stadium, when you have the training facility, when you have 10,000 people a game. you know, the recruitment that Danny Cruz and James O'Connor and our team over there can do now, you know, you're not recruiting on potential or what it can be. You're saying, no, you can come here right now. And that's how you go get Arturo Ordóñez off Pittsburgh and you get Taylor Davila from Rio Grande as soon as he knows his team is folding. You're no longer taking as many risks in your recruitment. And I think that that has all come together at the right time when we need it to bring in a lot of players. You're not bringing guys in to say, well, maybe they can crack the lineup. I mean, you're bringing in guys saying, you know, something's going to have to be wrong for him to not start on this team next year. And I think that makes a big difference. And I think it's pretty cool. I mean, we have a professional soccer team in Louisville that is bullying markets like Pittsburgh and just larger cities and their clubs. It's a cool thing.
It's, I mean, at the very least, it's just a lot of fun to go watch this team play at home right now because they score goals like crazy, particularly at home. They are constantly threatening the opposition. It's just a joyful experience to go to Lynn Family Stadium. And you mentioned 10,000 fans. The environment is strong as ever. And it feels like to me, based on what you were just saying, that this is kind of the moment where Lou City has now fully arrived. Lou City's arrived plenty, right? Winning a couple of titles, winning as much as they have, Eastern Conference Final every year, yada, 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 on and on. But now they've fully arrived as the bully on the block in the USL, which is what we all kind of thought would eventually come, right? When the stadium is in the works, when the training facility is in the works, when they had the history of winning that they had, everything finally now in year 10 is kind of coming together where there's enough history that they are the establishment big club in the USL. And like you said, in the offseason, made it, I would imagine, not easy, but easier for Danny Cruz to go out there and recruit players, top players from other teams. And that's one of the recurring themes also in their comments, these new guys that have come in into this team. Jake Morris recently had comments about appreciating the fans, appreciating the environment, appreciating where he is. Guys that played it, like you said, Davila at Rio Grande, they folded because they frankly just weren't successful. San Diego Loyal, kind of a similar situation, although the MLS situation made it a little bit different, thinking of like guys like Sam Gliedel, just as an example. Arturo Ordóñez, Pittsburgh's a great situation, but he moved to a better situation in Louisville City. So it's just finally Louisville City realizing its potential within the USL to be the destination team, and that has led itself to this whole new group that has come in. And I want to talk about them a little bit because you obviously work very closely with the team, work very closely with Danny Cruz. The theme that I have continued to go back to on this show with Benton and on our broadcasts and anywhere else I talk about this team, last year Danny Cruz constantly lamented the mentality of the group. They'd have a poor performance, they'd lose on the road or lose at home, frankly, which they did quite a bit. They'd have a performance that was subpar, and he would say, well, our mentality wasn't right, we didn't come ready to play. Stuff like that. This new group of guys all seem to be super fiery, competitive dudes who want to go out there and win no matter what they're doing. Is that the same observation you've had being up close with the team?
Yeah. I think that was the huge focus last year. I mean, and I'll say about Danny is what he tells the team is what he tells us after the game.
Right.
It's the same message. So, you know, I think we, you know, having grown up around here, you're used to Rick Pitino playing the game or John Calipari playing the game or getting nothing out of Bobby Petrino. Like it's very genuine what Danny says. So you actually do know where the team is and what the emphasis is. And so last year when he says we're going on the road and we don't like that we have to play on a baseball field because our field is perfect and the mentality is not right, like that's what he's telling those guys too. So, you know, what you see is what you get. And I think that's great, first of all. Second of all, you know, then he goes out and recruits toward it. So I think there was an emphasis, and you know, the two guys I mentioned are a perfect example, in Davila and Ordóñez. They've had a lot of individual success, but they haven't been at clubs where they've won anything. And so guys are coming here knowing, you know, if I come in and everything goes right, we're going to at least be playing for a trophy because Louisville City has played for a trophy in 9 straight seasons. I think that's a big motivating factor, along with just the quality of life that you get to play here. You know, that not many places around the league where you – come to work every day, you get breakfast and lunch, you have a weight room, you have a film room, you have a proper locker that's yours every day, you know, that you're not sharing any spaces that, you know, with some random baseball team or whatever. You know, this is like a legit, proper soccer club at this point. And I think we're now just seeing the benefits because there just aren't that many spots open. You know, Louisville City doesn't turn over the roster a lot because guys want to stay. So finally this past offseason, some spots opened and you're allowed to bring in those caliber of players. And I think that's what we're seeing the results of. And I'll just add one more thing, you know, to what you were saying of you know, the mentality factor and all that. I remember back in late January, they had trained a few days and the weather wasn't great. And I just went down and asked Danny, like, how's it going? Are you seeing what you want to see? And he's like, fantastic. Like, some of the best sessions that we've ever had, but nothing's gone wrong yet. And that was in late January, and now we're in late May, and I feel like still nothing has really gone wrong, which is probably a testament to the group that they have.
Yeah, there's so many things that have continued to go right over the course of the season, not just the fact that they performed so well at home, won a ton of games in contention, you know, one of the legitimate title contenders this year. And by the way, Charleston last night drew on the road, so it's a two-point gap right now for Louisville City from first place in not only the Eastern Conference but the entire league, and they've got two games in hand on Charleston. So if they win those two games or at least get results in those two games, they're in prime position to win a regular season title and be a top seed heading into the playoffs. But to the point about things going right, the health is there for this team. That was such a story last year, I feel like, over the course of the year. The injury list just continued to pile up week after week after week. You didn't know who was going to be in the lineup day in, day out. Last night was one of the rare examples where we saw Kyle Adams held from the game, but for a minor injury. He was listed as questionable. Adrian Perez was also listed as questionable, but he started and scored in the game, played really well. And obviously we all know Brian Ombi, the extent of his injury, but he's really the only injury to note. So that's one thing that's gone really well. But the other thing, back to the mentality, the mental side of it, the emotional side of it for this team, there was a quote last night from Jake Morris, who was man of the match, by the way, scored a terrific goal, had a really impressive shift.
Yeah, I thought he was man of the match before the goal.
I did as well. I did as well. He was just working so hard, great balls into the box. Anyway, the quote from him, he said, "I think this team is probably the most resilient in the USL. When we go down, there's no doubt in our minds that we're going to come back and get another one." And in other words, another goal. And that is evident on the way this team plays. Even last night, it's a little bit of a different game last night than the other routes that they've had at home, where they really just, in those games, came out and were far and away the better team, superior from the opening whistle, and made it count on the scoreboard. Last night was a very competitive first half. Detroit was in the game. They had a couple of big chances. They had a shot on goal, I think, in the opening 5 minutes or so from Ben Morris. They had a shot on target from a free kick that Damian Loss had to save. They eventually take the lead on that corner kick. But Lou City still, despite giving up those chances, had more shots, had more chances, looked like the better of the two teams. It may have been a little bit closer, but still looked like the better of two teams. So it's not like in the first half they came out and were just flat out outplayed and then turned it on, hit the switch, figured it out. They were the better team the entire game, even in a game where they quote-unquote struggled in the first half. And that just goes to show the dominance, the potential dominance of this team, the dominance we've already seen, but I say potential dominance over the course of the season because, like you pointed out, we're still in May, and we got to go all the way through the end of October before we get to the playoffs, so we can't count our chickens in terms of how good this team is. But they just continue to show up and thump teams, at home particularly. It's encouraging to see, I think, is what I'll say, for fans of this team that were paying close attention last year, that were just so frustrated with the results and the performances, and at times it wasn't fun to watch the team last year. Completely different story this year. More or less every time out, especially at home, is just a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say last night the pessimist in me was at least, you know, early in the first half, like, you know, maybe we haven't played anybody good at home. I don't know. You know, like you mentioned, the chances, they had that free kick on the edge of the box that, you know, Damian Loss made, I think, a pretty incredible save of the ball. I think it maybe either bent through the wall or whatever, and you know, you could be down 1-0 there. Then you end up being down 1-0, and you start to think, uh-oh, and then, you know, I think it was great that the center backs and, you know, Sharpie and Ordonez connect to get one goal, and it sort of, you know, jump starts, I think, probably some really good conversations at half about strategically what are we going to do. And they come out in the second half and they treat Detroit like they've treated every other team at home. That was great to see. And Detroit, I mean, that ends up 5-1. Detroit, I think, had entered, played in 8 games and had only conceded 7 goals the entire season. So they almost doubled their goal tally against in a matter of minutes last night. So, I mean, I don't know. I went on Diener's show the other day. I texted him. I was like, you know, we've had the Derby. We've had the PGA. I feel like people have kind of forgotten what's going on here, and we need to remind them. And You know, I think that's the ultimate jinx. Is I'm going to go on the radio and say, we're scoring 4 goals a game at home, and you need to come out and see it.
Yeah.
And it actually happened. So I think, you know, when your team can overcome the radio jinx, you know, maybe there really is something there.
There might be. They've not gotten over, if you want to think of it as a jinx, the kind of road jinx that they're under this year. It's hard to be critical of this team, right? They've been so good. They've won games away from home this year. They've gotten results away from home this year. But considering how great they've looked at home, it's a little bit puzzling when they go on the road like they did last week to Rhode Island and come out with a scoreless tie. The week before at Las Vegas in a 2-2 game against a Vegas team that was out of the playoff picture in the Western Conference. A very back-and-forth game, a game that they easily could have lost, but also certainly could have won the way that it went down. But the road results haven't been the same as the home results to this point in the season. I know they're aware of it. They talk about it. They've mentioned it. But what do you see from the team? Is it just a matter of when they're on the road, it's sometimes difficult to play in those places? They're not using that as an excuse. I think it's just sometimes a reality. I mean, the field condition at Rhode Island last week was less than ideal, and Rhode Island kind of leaned into that with the way they played, with a very physical, almost foul-minded kind of strategy from Rhode Island. So what do you see from the team on the road so far this year?
Yeah, I think just because of how well they played at home, it sort of makes it look like they're playing poorly on the road. I don't think they're playing poorly. I think they're getting, you know, the results that they should be getting. To me, the story of the season is going to be if you keep taking care of business at home and if you keep getting results at the rate that they've gotten them on the road, you're at home throughout the playoffs and you get to play the kind of soccer that you want to play. And quite frankly, the kind of soccer that other teams are scared to have to play against you when you think about the width of the field and the way you can get the ball to roll there. So, I mean, it's been, I think the only natural grass, full-size turf pitch we played on is at Charleston on the road this year. And, you know, they'll tell you that we played one bad half of the season and that was at Charleston where you get the opener and they answer with 3 goals and you look around and say, what just happened here? And then they come out in the first half and they outplayed Charleston, should have drawn, could have won the number of chances they generated. So, you know, I look at it as every time we've played a team on a real field where we've had our head in the game, everything's gone right. And then some of these road venues, I mean, Seattle, that's trash. That's just, there's some places we've gone. Rhode Island, that's not great. I mean, the way that, you know, I think we had 2 great chances in the box with Adrian Perez and Ray Serrano, and they both scuff the ball, and you know, then the other team goes down on their side of the field and they do it too. It's bad turf. You could see they didn't water it. I mean, it's just all these basic things. I don't know anything about soccer, and I'm looking at that going, this is not great for the game. Yeah. This is not how you build fans. You know, you need a real field and you need that investment. So, you know, hopefully these teams over time, you know, you start to see more soccer specific stadiums come into the game. But as it is now, I think the strategy is dominate at home. Do what you can on the road and just make sure you finish top of the table and you don't have to worry about going on the road when it really, really, really counts.
Yeah, that's absolutely seems to be the case for this Louisville City team. The phrase the fortress is getting tossed around a lot. The players have used that phrase. Danny Cruz, I think, has used that phrase. Fans are starting to use that phrase. It is proving to be a fortress for Louisville City. A little bit of the issue, though, over the next month, they're going to be on the road quite a bit. 4 of their 6 games in the month of June are away from home. So can they stay above water? Can they keep pace with Charleston, who, again, has had a couple of bad results on the road for them? They lose to El Paso, one of the worst teams in the league. They tie at Monterey Bay last night. So, you know, that'll be part of the interesting story over the month of June. But they've been dominant at home. And if you're out there listening to us, come to a game because this team's a whole lot of fun to watch. That's the kind of big overarching point that we're making about Louisville City. They have been just fabulous at home, scoring goals like crazy, again, outscoring their opponents by 22 goals at home. I mean, it's just every game is a laugher at Lynn Family Stadium so far this year. We'll take a break. We're going to talk about Racing Louisville on the other side. They're coming off of a good result, trying to gather some momentum under a first-year head coach. And then coming up a little bit later in the show, we'll be talking to Jonathan about overarching things going on with the organization, with Soccer Holdings. We'll talk about the international friendlies. And we're going to answer your questions, those that you have. 437-9680 to ask Jonathan a question or hit us up on Twitter, X, whatever it may be called, at Soccer City Radio, at Jeff Milby. And let us know. We want to answer your questions in the third segment. We're talking Racing Louisville when we come back here on Soccer City.
You're listening to Soccer City on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, back to the latest on Louisville's professional soccer club.
Things are looking up for Louisville's professional soccer clubs. We were just talking about Louisville City. They continue to be as thrilling as they've ever been, particularly at home, and they're right in the thick of the number one seed chase, the regular season title chase in the USL. 2 points back of Charleston with two games in hand and a whole lot of soccer yet to be played. But it has been a really terrific start to 2024 for Louisville City. Not quite as terrific a start to 2024 for Racing Louisville, but certainly a more competitive Racing Louisville team than we've seen in years past. And as it stands right now, they're in the playoff picture, sitting in eighth place in the NWSL out of 14 teams now that the league has expanded a couple of years in a row. So Racing right in the thick of the playoff chase, right where really I think fans could have reasonably hoped that they would be, reasonably expected that they would be, especially considering they're under a first-year head coach in Bev Yanez this season. And they are coming off of back-to-back encouraging performances, notably, most recently, a win on the road over Chicago, where Emma Sears scored the NWSL goal of the week to give them a 1-0 win. That's on the heels of a 3-3 tie at Kansas City, one of the top teams in the league. Coming into that weekend, they were number one in the league. They currently sit number two, so that's a quality point on the road against Kansas City a couple of weeks ago. Emma Sears, by the way, had the goal of the week in that game as well, so back-to-back goals of the week for her. And let's start with her, Jonathan. A couple of, I guess it was last week, she signs the contract extension, or at least it was announced that she signed a contract extension, locking her up through 2026. Second-round draft pick out of Ohio State. Just has been one of the eye-catching developments for Racing Louisville this year. You kind of knew, you know Savannah DeMello is going to be a star potentially. You knew Taylor Flint coming in the offseason from San Diego had a reputation as a really quality player. She's been with the women's national team. You knew that those couple of players would be impact players, particularly offensively in the attack. But Raylan Turner, the top draft pick for Racing Louisville in the draft, has had moments, but Emma Sears has really caught the eye, particularly with her speed and her finishing ability, which she put on display over the last in the Chicago game particularly. What do you see from her? What do you make out of what she's been able to do as a rookie coming into this club and making a difference already?
Yeah, I mean, not just a rookie, but she was our second round selection.
Right.
You look at the history of the NWSL and the draft, those top 6, 7, 8 picks they usually sign, and then after that you don't know. So I think, as I saw us picking in the draft, and I'm thinking, there's a good player for preseason, we'll see what happens. I think it was the first day of preseason. I don't know the length of the run that they do, but it's a standard run, not the beep test, but it's like a distance run. She was the fastest racing player through the run, faster than some Louisville City players, and that kind of got the building buzzing a little bit. It was like, have you heard about this Emma Sears? And that has translated to the field. I mean, there's a noticeable difference, I feel like, between the men's and women's game. The women, they seem to have more time and space on the ball, more one-on-one duels, and she's a perfect player for that. I mean, she can carry the ball from one end of the field to the other. She's literally running past people. Sometimes her crosses turn into goals. I think regardless of what she says, that looked like a cross to me. So
goal of the week, though.
Goal of the week.
But I agree with you. Yeah, that was definitely a cross.
And I just think the speed is her best weapon, but she also was able to finish. I look at last year, Timby Kotlana was on the team. She sometimes had speed, would literally run over the end line and not get the finish. So it's not like all Emma Sears does is run. There's a lot of technical ability, a lot of skill there behind that too. So a little bit of a nice surprise, really, when you think about her being the second-round pick and Raylan Turner being the first-round pick, not to say that Raylan also hasn't had a high impact as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the finishing. Talk about the finishing. I mean, she can really hit the ball. That's something in the women's game, not as many players, maybe compared to the men's game, can really hit the ball with pace and power and drive it, whether it's putting in crosses or whether it's going for goal and trying to shoot. And her goal against Chicago is the perfect example of that. From the right side of the box, hit it across her body with power, across the face of the goalkeeper, and into the side netting to score. I mean, just really hits it with power. And the question now kind of becomes, well, there are a couple of questions that come out of this bright start for Emma Sears. One, is there a rookie wall coming at any point? You see it in every sport, pretty much.
Oh, we've seen it on our teams in the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So is that going to come up for Emma Sears in the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months? Obviously, this season there will be a big gap in the middle of the year with the Olympics. There will certainly be some friendlies and stuff going on with Racing Louisville involved. You would assume she'll be a part of those, so maybe that plays a factor in whether or not she hits the rookie wall or when she hits the rookie wall if she does. But then the second question about her is how good can she be? How high can she soar? How much can she achieve in this game? Is she a player that down the road might get looks with the women's national team? I think it's certainly possible. She's got to learn some things, right? One thing that stood out to me, you mentioned her ability to carry the ball, you know, all the way from one end of the field to the other. But sometimes I think maybe she relies on that speed a little too much. She too often just kind of kicks it into space and trusts her ability, her running ability, to run on the end of it and get around the defender that's marking her. That works a lot for her, to be fair. But maybe a little more variance in that kind of area of the game are places that she can improve. But, There are a ton of rookies in the NWSL this year that are impressing. That's one of the stories of the league across the league is the number of rookies that are impressing. But she has been as impressive to me as any of them. And it just leads me to wonder, is the sky the limit? What is the limit for Emma Sears?
Yeah, I mean, you have to hope so. When you look at us as a club and how we build a roster, we cannot afford to whiff in the draft. You look at just the other markets that we compete against. Most of the players in the draft have never been to Louisville, Kentucky. They don't know anything about Louisville, Kentucky. We are the Derby and KFC. That is our brand.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity to get a young, bright player here happens in the draft because they enter the draft and we select them and they have to come here and they play. And we've had incredible luck with having players like Jalen Howell and Savannah DeMello who come here and they fall in love with the city and they want to stay. But I think that's the way Racing Louisville is going to succeed in like a league that's really player driven and really like star power driven is we're going to have to draft wisely, develop and create our own stars rather than bring them in like free agency, for example. So great, I think, last few drafts in that respect. When you look at Savannah going to the World Cup, Jalen's been called up. I mean, you look at Emma Sears' speed. If I'm the national team coach, I'm like, well, let's at least bring her to camp and see how that translates. I mean, it seems like common sense after maybe the Olympics.
Sure,
when they get
maybe
through
not
the
immediately,
cycle,
yeah.
But especially, I mean, you've got a new coach. I mean, if I'm the national team coach, I'm like, I want to see what I can do with Emma Sears' speed, and I want to see what I can do with Taylor Flint's height. And to me, that's Racing Louisville along with Savannah DeMello's skills. And you know, I think Jalen Howell's had a few injury setbacks this year, but I don't think she's done, certainly, getting opportunities at that next level, too.
Yeah, Taylor Flint, by the way, ESPN.com had her as one of the top 10 MVP candidates in the league right now, and that's despite her not scoring to this point in the year. Just a huge pickup and a player that probably deserves a look with the women's national team. Savannah DeMello playing well right now, scored a terrific goal at Kansas City, had a great free kick against Washington.
Feels like she's back.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think so.
I think she went to the World Cup, and that takes something out of a player, and she said that in interviews, and I feel like you get the offseason, you get to settle back in. I think she's finding herself again.
But it is the conversation about Racing Louisville is a completely different one than the one about Louisville City that we were just having in the first segment, where Louisville City has realized their potential as the big boys in the league. Mm-hmm. Never going to be the case for Racing Louisville, just by virtue of the market that we are in. And it's a different conversation than we have about Louisville sports generally. Whether it's U of L, they're in the ACC. They're one of the power teams in the greater landscape of college athletics. Obviously, a great men's basketball tradition that they have leveraged into greater success in other sports. And you don't have that same kind of big market versus small market conversation in college athletics. You have a conversation about tradition, but not a conversation about market size. And it's just, let's just face the facts. As people from the city of Louisville, the NWSL will probably never go to a smaller market than Louisville, Kentucky.
Correct.
Probably never. They're expanding to Boston. They just expanded to Utah. They're going to expand to other major market pro sports cities that don't have an NWSL team in the future.
All these places that have soccer-specific stadiums.
Right.
I mean, you've got Cincinnati, I think, is a candidate. Austin is a candidate. You know, anybody who's Nashville's got to be a candidate.
St. Louis, I'm sure, is.
Yeah,
as
all
well.
These places that are filling these soccer-specific stadiums with their men's teams have to be looking at this as a huge revenue opportunity and a way to just get some more quality dates in their stadium. I think the same as Louisville City's ownership back in 2019 looked at the NWSL and said, you know, that league at that time was very much on par with the USL Championship. And it is just absolutely, I mean, you talk about buying in at the right time on a product. I don't know if there's like a stock on the market that has gone up higher than the worth of a, yes, on the open market than the worth of an NWSL franchise since they paid, what, $1 or $2 million for it back in 2019. I think, the last team was it 65 or, and then, you know, San Diego got
that sold for. Yeah.
San Diego got sold, I think, for more than 100 million. I mean, just crazy to think about, you know,
the valuations. You know,
good for the owners too, by the way. It's a great success story when you think about all the investment that they put in, not only building the stadium, but then doubling down in, you know, June of 2020 in the height of the pandemic. Everybody's still getting paid at the club, and then they say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and we're going to build this $15 million facility as well because we're bringing this women's team. And the investment just hasn't stopped, and it's good to see them get an asset like this where you know the return comes one day.
And it speaks to the growth of women's sports generally. We're seeing that a lot with women's basketball right now. Caitlin Clark and everybody else in the WNBA, this rookie class that has captured so much attention. But to circle back, the reason I got into that conversation was about the draft. Racing Louisville is going to have to nail the draft, like you were saying. They're the smallest market team in the league. They will always be the smallest market team in the league. They're going to have to nail the draft because that is the time where you control the rights to players. Like you mentioned, free agency in a very player-driven league. You think the NBA is player-driven. The NWSL is more player-driven than even the NBA, where the fans follow the stars more than they follow the teams. Fans attach themselves to individual players in more significant ways than they attach themselves to their local teams in many instances. At least that's been the history of the league. Maybe that'll change over the coming years, but that's been the history of the league. So Racing Louisville's going to have to nail the draft, and to your point, they really have. Go all the way back to Emily Fox. I mean, she didn't stick around Racing Louisville, but they got something in return for her, right, in the trade for Abby Ersig and Carson Pickett with North Carolina. Turned out to be a great deal because Emily Fox, a year later, she's over in England playing for Arsenal, and that, if she had just walked from Racing Louisville, they get nothing in return, and they certainly don't have two regular starters along the back line and two top-quality, all-league-type performers along their back line in those two players. So to see the rookies come through this year with Sears and Turner, to see the players that they've drafted in years past either develop or be turned into assets, there are reasons to be optimistic about this Racing Louisville club going forward, and reasons to be optimistic in the immediate future, not just the long-term future with the development of young players, but the immediate future. Just little moments over the course of the season where you feel like they can grab some momentum for themselves. Obviously, that 5-1 win at Utah on Thunder over Louisville Day back a month ago on April 20th seemed like a big opportunity where they can get a foothold for themselves, maybe propel themselves toward that playoff picture. Didn't quite work out that way, right? A couple of results didn't go their way. They had back-to-back losses at Orlando, at home to Washington. Seemed like that all of the potential momentum from that win had dissipated, had gone away. But kind of back against the wall situation, a game nobody expected Racing Louisville to really get anything out of a couple of weeks ago at Kansas City. They get a point in a back-and-forth game that they led, they trailed, they gave up a goal in stoppage time that looked surely like they were going to go down with a loss. 13 minutes in, DeMello pulls a rabbit out of her hat, ties the game at 3, you get a point. And then they carry that momentum forward last week at Chicago in what was the best performance of the season for this team. They dominated that game. Frankly, should have scored. If you want to be critical of them, they should have scored 2 or 3 or 4 goals in that game based on the number of chances, based on the possession that they had for the first, I'll say, 65 minutes or so. Certainly the last half of the game, the last 25 minutes of the game were very competitive. Chicago had plenty of chances to tie the game and maybe even win it themselves. But you just start to see with the results and the performances, most notably against Chicago, that things might be shifting in the right direction. And hey, it's May 30th. We're going to be in June in a couple of days' time. The next time Racing Louisville plays, it'll be in June. And they'll be in a playoff spot when they start that game next Friday at Lynn Family Stadium. And that's got to be encouraging for everybody who's seen what this club has gone through over these years, just not quite able to get it right. It feels like they're as close to getting it right as ever right now.
Yeah, and I'll say, I think all the teams you brought up, you know, you mentioned Orlando, Kansas City, Washington, Chicago. I'm looking at the table right now. They're all in the top six.
Yeah.
It's been a very tough stretch. I think, you know, if Racing just kind of wins the games they need to win, this is not going to be a team that is, you know, quote-unquote selling at the All-Star break. I think, you know, for the first time. Last year, you know, there were bits and spells of success, but I think we all went into the fall thinking it's still a long shot to make the playoffs. I think this year, you know, it's very reasonable that you go into the falls assuming we're going to, you know, be in the playoffs or it's going to come down to the last day, and it's not going to come down to the last day like last year where you need, you know, these four teams to lose and these two to draw, and we need to, by the way, beat the team at the top of the table. So, you know, it just seems like it's a much better setup. The whole vibe around the team with Bev being the coach, I mean, we love Bev. I think everybody, the old saying that all the players kept saying, you know, we'll run through the wall for Bev or whatever. I think that's going to make a huge difference where maybe some of our teams have fallen off in the past. I think this one will you know, persevere a little bit better through the summer.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. And again, an off weekend this weekend for Racing Louisville with the international break in women's soccer. But two home games to look forward to for Racing. Coming up on Friday, a week from tomorrow, that's June 7th, an 8 o'clock kickoff against the Houston Dash at Lynn Family Stadium. And then the week after that, a big high-profile game. It's nationally televised on ESPN at noon on Saturday, June 15th, against New Jersey, New York, Gotham. At again, noon on Saturday, June 15th. So a couple of opportunities to see this team in action, in person, and a big chance for them riding this wave of momentum. They come off the road, this road trip where they're able to get 4 points out of two games. Now you've got two home games coming up, a real opportunity to make some hay and solidify their position as one of the playoff contenders in the NWSL over the next couple of weeks for Racing Louisville. We'll take another time out. Our final segment of the broadcast coming up. Big picture stuff with Jonathan Lintner, the Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Soccer Holdings. The international friendlies coming up. I'm really curious about Louisville City taking on Eintracht Frankfurt later on this summer. A big team out of Germany, a Europa League kind of team over the last couple of years. We'll get all into that when we come back and answer your questions as well if you have them. 437-9680 is the text line, or hit us up on Twitter at Soccer City Radio. We're talking about all that next.
You're locked on Soccer City, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, back to the latest on Louisville's professional soccer clubs.
Welcome back. Final segment, Soccer City, every Thursday here on ESPN 680 and 105.7, 6 to 7 o'clock, talking all things Louisville City and Racing Louisville's two professional soccer clubs. Jonathan Lintner is our guest today. He's been with us all hour. And he's going to provide a little insight into kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't necessarily know about. And the biggest headline behind the scenes that I think we can get into right off the bat, Jonathan, is that friendly against Eintracht Frankfurt coming up on July 30th for Louisville City. Frankfurt, a team out of Germany that is well-regarded, certainly would be the biggest team Louisville City has ever played. We had the international friendlies last year that were hugely successful, right? But they're both lesser-known teams in Kaiserslautern out of Germany, and then a team out of Mexico as well. So just run us through how this came about. I know that international friendlies against bigger-name teams have been in those backroom conversations over the years. There was the rumor a couple of years ago that Wolverhampton of the English Premier League was going to come to town, and it kind of fell through at the last minute. I've heard Leeds United tossed out a couple of years ago as a team that might have come here, might have even been reports online about that. Ultimately didn't come to fruition. So big picture, where is the club in terms of international friendlies in the future? And then also, how did this Frankfurt game come about?
Yeah, I think if as you look at the landscape of soccer in America and where we are in the USL Championship, but the facility that we have, it's like, how do you show some ambition? You know, how can you separate yourself, be different, give your fans something unique? So we got into the international friendly business last year. Like you said, played a team from Germany and Mexico. I would view that as sort of our proof of concept year. You know, bring some teams in, make sure they have good experiences, and then you kind of go up the ladder and see what you can get. And that's exactly what we did with the German club. And you know, not to spoil too much, what we're trying to do with the Mexican club is go from, okay, we've hosted a second division club, now let's go after a first division club. On the German side, you know, it's no secret what the English Premier League has been able to do in America as far as getting their games on TV and creating fans and building brands and generating revenue in America. The German Federation is trying to do that to a certain extent as well, and they're funding some of it. So they actually paid a stipend to Kaiserslautern to come over here as part of their trip. It helps us, you know, manage the fee of bringing a team over. It's not, they don't come over here for free to play against us. They know that we're going to sell tickets and attempt to offset that cost. And so they did that last year. I think Kaiserslautern went out and said that was a good experience, went back to the Federation. And then it's kind of, you know, who's coming over? And Frankfurt was looking to come over to America. They're playing a couple of games while they're here. I will say probably the most flattering part of them coming over is that they want to headquarter in Louisville and work out of our training facility for, you know, a week or two while they're here. I mean, and you mentioned the Europa League before the break. They're locked into at least the Europa League, we'll have an eye on the Champions League final this Saturday, because if Dortmund is able to beat Real Madrid, that will bump Frankfurt up into the Champions League, which is one of those, like, we were playing in a baseball stadium and now we're hosting a Champions League type of moments. So we'll have an eye on that on Saturday for sure. And yeah, like I said, there's other dates potentially on the calendar. We're getting a little tight, I think, on July 13th, which is an open Saturday for a potential friendly. I don't know if anything will come together there, but there's still a pretty distinct possibility that we would bring a Mexican team in the fall. But I think that's still an ongoing conversation with a number of teams. Their schedule, much like Major League Soccer teams, gets kind of congested in the summer due to Leagues Cup. And then there's season structure. You know, they play like the spring season, the fall season. So still some pieces that would have to come together for something like that to happen. But it's a conversation that's been had.
And for anybody who's not familiar with German soccer, I mean, look, frankly, I don't watch a ton of the Bundesliga. I have a familiarity with it. I realize that Bayern Munich didn't win it this year for the first time in like a decade or something like that. But Eintracht Frankfurt is one of the top teams in that league. They finished in sixth place, which is a Europa League spot. To your point, if Dortmund wins the Champions League final this weekend, they would then move into the Champions League, which is the most prestigious competition, the most prestigious tournament in the world in terms of club soccer. It's what everybody wants to be a part of. Every player in the world grows up wanting to be a part of the Champions League in Europe. And that would be the kind of quality team that's coming here in Frankfurt at the end of July. It's cool to hear that they're going to kind of be basing themselves here. And I think maybe that's a growth opportunity for Soccer Holdings and for Louisville as a city in general. You've got Copa America this summer. It's probably a little late to organize things there, but you've got the Men's World Cup coming up in a couple of years' time. The Club World Cup, I think, is coming as well in the next couple of years. Maybe Louisville can present itself as a training camp base to some team in the future for one of those kind of competitions, because the world is coming to the U.S. for soccer over the next 2 or 3 years for tons of different tournaments, whether it's the World Cup or Copa America or the Club World Cup, on and on and on. Everybody wants a slice of this pie. You talked about the Bundesliga and the German Federation trying to kind of brand themselves in America and grow their market in America. A lot of places are trying to do that. Soccer in general, worldwide soccer is trying to do that. So it's interesting to hear, and that's exciting that they're going to be here for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 26th World Cup. I mean, I think we definitely have aspirations of trying to throw a hat in the ring and maybe be, like you said, a training site for a team that's competing in that World Cup. It's a complicated process, and it's not really in our control, but you know, what you can do is submit your application and bid for it, and probably show FIFA that, you know, something they didn't really expect to exist in Louisville, Kentucky, and you know, what is essentially kind of a flyover state, but at the same time is a really centrally located state for a team that may be thinking about, okay, it's going to be hot, we need to be ready for that, and then how do we get anywhere in the U.S. in like 4 to 5 hours on a flight? So, you know, I think we stand a fighting chance there, and you know, that'll be something that the organization tries to get. But I think regardless of whether we get that or not, you know, soccer is going to be impossible to ignore in 2026. And, you know, as somebody who did not grow up a soccer fan, I think that stigma has definitely changed from, you know, when I'm growing up, you have soccer kids and then you have the kids who play football, baseball, and basketball. I was the latter. Now I feel like soccer kids are regular kids. And so you have this whole generation growing up. It's flipped to where now it's like not cool to dislike soccer. And I think that's going to continue to benefit us here. And whatever we can do to take advantage of all that momentum, whether it's hosting a team that could be in the Europa League or could be in the Champions League, or trying to get, you know, some sort of pull in for that World Cup, I think is only going to raise the profile of our clubs.
We solicited questions from fans to ask Jonathan. We got one question. It's about the playground. Parents.
Serious stuff here.
Serious stuff. Anthony Leanhart, who has to be the number one consumer of Louisville City-related content. He has constantly chirped at this show over the years, but even back when I hosted it in 2017, whenever that was. He's our number one fan. He wanted to know about the playground. So, you know, obviously Lynn Family Stadium is a family-friendly venue. Lots of kids at every game. Lots of kids taking part in that fan section behind the scoreboard, playing on the mini pitch. And the playground evidently has taken a hit. So just update the fans that maybe bring their kids to games on what's going on with the playground.
Yeah, we've got the Lou City and Racing dads who are constantly asking about the playground.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Taylor Sorrells out there and a few others. And yeah, so the playground was not structurally sound, had to be removed. And the way our budgeting works at the company, we did not budget to build a playground this year. So not expecting to have a replacement this year. That doesn't mean that we can't have one in the future. I will say they've had some good success at repurposing that area at a few games at least, so it's not sitting empty. We've had live music twice. We had the sing-along karaoke. I don't know if you saw that at Thunder.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
And then we had some live music before a Louisville City game here pretty recently in that same space. So kind of remains to be seen on the playground. I guess more updates to come on that. I will say one addition that they're making in the fan zone, if you've paid any attention out there, there's a new video board going up that, you know, we could play what's on the video board. Right now, you know, if you're out there, if your kid's playing mini pitch soccer during the game, you'll be able to watch our game on the board. Or we could show something else. You know, it's watch party potential, other programming out there. So that'll be a nice addition, you know, a video board right now where you just don't have a view of one that exists.
Just a few minutes left. Big picture stuff. I don't think there necessarily will even be an update, but I just feel like I want to ask you about it because fans talk about it. People talk about it. We saw a few weeks ago Kansas City and the NWSL announced a big development around their brand new stadium, apartments, restaurants, retail, all that kind of stuff. There's been conversation in the past about that around Lynn Family Stadium that was part of the initial plans that were shown to people. And we've talked about it before, you and I, but just on the air with fans listening, is there any update there? Is that still in the plans long term? What is the ownership thinking about that?
Yeah, definitely still in the plans. I think it's been a challenge. You know, there was a story, I think it was last winter, that WDRB did, kind of updating it. And you know, I think one of our owners, Tim Malloy, I think he put on a brave face and said, you know, COVID's not an excuse. I tend to think COVID actually was a pretty good excuse. I mean, you go from this environment where people were going to the office, you know, they were going downtown a lot more. And I'm not one of those people who says people don't go downtown. I've been down there. It's coming back for sure. But just, you know, some of the needs that were there structurally before the pandemic are not there now. It's much more expensive to build. And you know, it's quite frankly, it's a risk for people who want to start a business there. You know, they could go to Nulu, et cetera. So I think that the main challenge right now is they're trying to figure out how to get the site ready to be built on. There are a lot of elevation changes, as anybody who's walked through the parking lots knows. There's a power line that goes through the facility. This used to be a brownfield site. There's a lot going on underground that they need to figure out. That'll be the next step to basically prepare it then for development. So I don't have a timeline. I do know it's something that our ownership is really focused on and that, you know, they want to follow through on, but kind of remains to be seen when that will start.
All right, and a fun one here, and this is a selfish one that I want to ask you. I've asked you about it before. We've talked about it before, but on air, I want to get it out there for the world, the Louisville City and Racing Louisville fan base, the few of them that listen to the show on a weekly basis. We got to get some championship banners or some signs or something up in the stadium to point out to people, hey, this team won a title a couple of times. There were the
banners. You didn't like the banners we had before?
I did. I mean,
you actually liked them?
I mean, they were a little small.
Yeah, they were horrible.
They were a little small.
They were not befitting of what they were.
But they were
symbolizing.
They were better than no banner.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. One question about that. Where are those banners? Who has those banners?
Somebody, I have no idea.
I'm sure our friend Benton Newman would love to get his hands on them and hang them in his office someplace.
Yeah. So the banners come up every once in a while. I feel like the last time they did was maybe early last year. And we were talking about, you know how there's now signage on the sides of the scoreboards? So my idea was to maybe put them up there. And we were literally looking at designs, and then like somebody from sponsorship was like, "Oh, I sold that space."
So, right.
Okay. Well, we're not gonna, you know, we need money to come into the club. We need to operate. Everybody needs to you know, get their paychecks. So, I don't know. I feel like other stuff always has come up, but now you're making. I'm gonna bring it up on Monday and see if we can get that conversation started again.
Is this-
and I. I think what really starts it is we got to win something. And I think when we win something, then it's like, where are we going to put this? And, oh, by the way, we have a few other things. So, you know, I feel like if we don't get it done this summer, maybe Danny Cruz will force us to get it done in November.
Similar kind of vein of thought with just a couple of minutes to go. The plus three flag that has been flown after wins. This I'm not sure if I missed a formal announcement of it or something. Where did that come from? It's really cool. It's one of these things that kind of is in line with the banners of, like, you know, little things about the stadium that make it feel like a home kind of thing. How did that come about? What's the story on that thing?
Yeah, so our stadium staff was sort of reacting. We have this promotion called Fall City Postgame Pints. Obviously, Fall City tied in with John Neese, our chairman, and they were like, how do we do something after we win to spice that up a little bit? So the plus three flag, I think it looks a lot like the W, you know, like from the Chicago Cubs. So I think after the games, when we win, they've been having Danny and whoever gets voted the man of the match, they go over there, there's a little post-game toast, and they raise the flag up there. So those things always take time. I actually noticed last night at the game, I mean, there were a lot of people over there, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe this is going to catch on.
Maybe
so
it's happening.
People seem to, I saw people posting videos of Jake, you know, rolling the flag up there. So it seems like that one is kind of catching on. We might have a winner there.
Between that and the banners, just a couple of things that, you know, little traditions that make a stadium feel like a home as opposed to just a collection of seats around a green spot of grass. Any other big thoughts you want to add? Anything you want to promote coming up for the club generally, the organization generally? I know there are lots of events happening around the stadium all year long. Anything real quick?
Yeah, I would just say to people, you know, we appreciate the support. It feels like the stadium is more full this year, I'll say. And we've seen just I think, the engagement grow that much more. You know, we're selling about the same number of tickets, but more people are showing up, more people are engaging, and I think that's going to continue to grow with both our teams over the summer because they're in a position to play some really meaningful soccer this summer. So we have a lot of things to look forward to this year.
One game this weekend for you to look forward to, Louisville City at Miami. It is a 7 o'clock kickoff on Saturday night, 6:45. Our coverage will begin right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Jonathan, enjoyed talking to you. Enjoyed having you on the show.
We'll have to do it again in 7 years.
That's right. Yeah, 7 years from now. Put it on your calendar. Book it. Soccer City every Thursday at 6 o'clock here on ESPN Louisville.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.